overseas in selecting immigrants. And they also have classes locally, which is the LINK class. There was another paper the other day talking about how LINK newcomers are defined in the Canadian context from a very nationalist framework, which if you haven't heard it, maybe later. But with all the measures, the problem of immigrant exclusion or not very socially included remains. And I think it's a time for us to reconceptualize language and learning in order to really examine what's going on with immigrant settlement. And all in English words, is that really language is a focal point or language is a pretense? There are things on the PowerPoint I wouldn't go through just because of time. Basically, I reconceptualize learning. I guess I just want to fly. So I reconceptualize learning as participation and identity construction in the framework of communities of practice, which I will not go through. And reconceptualize language, I use Bourdieu's framework, basically bringing the social foundations of language and discourse studies, bring the social back to the studies of language and discourse. And based on this, I see there are two sets of language ideologies. One set would be emphasizing, not only recognizing, but also emphasizing the social economic origins of the differential values of linguistic varieties, or different languages and language varieties. And the differential value really originated from the unequal social-economic conditions of acquisition. And its value lies in the convertibility of linguistic products can be converted back to social-economic capital, which later we can use examples to illustrate. Basically, it's looking at language as resources which is unequally distributed across different social groups, and look at language as practice, not only a means to carry meaning, but also a means to construct social inequality. And conversely, the more mainstream or the mainstream ideology of a language has been looking at language as purely linguistic issues as the autonomous language system, without either ignoring completely that language has this social function, a function of constructing inequality, or misrecognize that the value of language lies in the linguistic value of the system, like this language is more clear, it's more logical, it's more aesthetic, and one particular ideology I would like to point out is the standard language ideology. This is a state-sponsored language ideology that's intimately connected to nationalism. I go to the next first. So this is originated from the bundle of language. Basically, the way in contemporary modern states, nation states, how they came into being and how they were legitimized. Since the 19th century Europe or 18th century Europe until now, basically, if we are one people share one language, we have same culture, we are one people who deserve one nation state. And that has implications for people's identity, because we all know language is not homogeneous. And people have different linguistic capitals. And in the field of immigrant settlement, that would be in the field of TESOL or applied linguistics, that's the native-like English being the norm of our field. Now go back to two aspects of a standard language ideology would be first, see language itself as homogeneous, and the second aspect, any variation is considered a negative and often connect to the speaker's traits, personal traits. You know, this, if this person is competent, is trustworthy, careful, competent, and all that. So these are the things that will be important to my discussion later. Basically, because of the reconceptualization, the question I ask includes what do immigrants do to learn what languages, at what places, and how, and with what consequences, and what enhances or hinders their learning, and how and why. And the case I use is a skilled immigrants from mainland China, because this is the largest group from 1995 to 2006, the largest group, the newest group in Canadian context. Also this group are self-identified and are identified by various government, various levels of government and the service providers as having language problems. Anyway, it's a 3-year ethnography, and with 1 year of a follow-up in Toronto. Oh. Okay. And you will just look at the slides, and I won't talk about it because there are too many. So basically, I trace five key participants' trajectory and analyze linguistic practices at several key institutions and analysis of language. I use critical discourse analysis and interactional social linguistic analysis, but with a critical focus. And this didn't come up very well, but the trajectories, this is the five key participants that I looked at. I'll just go through them briefly. The first one, Samuel Young, and he arrived in 2002 at the age of 25. He was a graphic designing person in China. And after many, many difficulties, all of these participants experienced some, not in the first year, but usually in the second year, or end of the second year or third year, they run off their savings and they didn't find places that they could integrate in the mainstream, and they returned to the Chinese community. They developed alternative spaces in ethnic business. In the sense, the language might be English, but the people they work with share some ethnic languages. So that's the definition of my ethnic businesses. And many of them are small size, like with less than 10 people, 5 people, 10 people. So that's the kind of a sector they end up with. But actually, it was at those small businesses, sometimes they found the opportunity for economic advancement. First of all, for survival. Secondly, for advancement. And sometimes they found a business opportunity to develop their own business, to become actually employers, small business owners. So the first one, Samuel Young, just one thing I want to mention, that he had so much trouble learning English and finding places to accept him. In the end, he found work at a Cantonese newspaper. So as a Mandarin speaker, he learned to speak Mandarin at and for work in a month to be able to carry out his regular duties, and his Cantonese continued improve, and his major working languages is Cantonese. And Grace and Timothy are a couple, and they work in accounting and network and computers. And the one thing that's significant in their trajectory is after so many failures, so-called failures to integrate into the mainstream, they went to church to study English. In the end, Greece was changing between working as an accounting clerk at those small ethnic businesses using English or work with Chinese community, and then back to some English-speaking environment, but as very low-level accounting clerk. And Timothy became a salesperson, knocking on doors 7 days a week, two shifts, to accumulate economic capital to support the family, and in the end, accumulate enough money to buy a house, and then also to actually toward 2006, December 2006, that was 5 years after his immigration, he started a business with two friends, one from church, one from the other. So they are helping newly immigrated Chinese immigrants finding jobs. So they didn't find job, but they are doing job agency work. And so they talked, the languages they use with customers, would be Chinese, but also English. And then when they connect to different employers, English as a lingua franca. The sales job has always been English as a lingua franca. The other two, Marco and Eileen, and they are couple too. Again, Marco lost money because of the business attempts, and in the end, work cleaning jobs. And cleaning jobs plus delivery Chinese food to accumulate capital again. Wow, okay. And then became self-employed as sales first, became top sales in the region, in the entire region, and in the end, hiring Chinese immigrants as sales. So by 2006, sometimes he had 80 people work for him. So again, the sales language is English, but the communication between colleagues can be Chinese, and Chinese can be dialects, can be Mandarin. Okay, so this is a quick summary of from the five people. I would say their desire to learn English and thus to infuse into the Chinese the mainstream economy and mainstream community affected significantly their first 1 or 2 years trajectory, where they went and where they wanted to find job. And they basically all the doors were closed in front of them one by one, and then they moved on. After economic crisis, in each case, they moved to the alternative economy. And some of the alternative spaces that integrated immigrants were categorized by inclusive institutional structures and interpersonal practices, which seem to often stem from pragmatic orientations to languages. For example, utilizing multiple linguistic resources for whatever ends, like either religious or business or whatever. It's very pragmatic approach to language later. Discussed somewhere else, and now I move to the exclusion, social exclusion example. This is some background to see why I think this exclusion happened, because of the policy at the federal level, the Canadian framework as multilingualism and multiculturalism and English-French official bilingualism actually established a hierarchy of citizenship and economic integration. And also, the example of the second actually is a very blunt statement of how immigrants are considered secondary to native-born. The economic integration problem in Canada is specific to certain minority groups, not to all immigrants, not immigrants from Europe, West and North Europe, for example. Okay. Now the examples of exclusion. I will use Timothy as an example. Timothy and Greece in the example. This just to show you how many attempts they made before they go to church. And so their reason for going to church really is to establish long-term relationships, finding access to authentic English, and finding long-term relationships, which they think is a source guaranteeing language learning. And at church, they had extensive informal network, which helped them. Actually, at church, language is not focus. It's really social networking. It's really social networking that's the focus. And because of the close relationship and the frequent socialization, they were able to get all kinds of support, including finding jobs and so on and so forth. I will just have to skip this. So at the first church that Timothy and Grace went to was a church, so-called a multicultural church, led by 1.5 generation Chinese Canadians, and served recent immigrants from China and Sri Lanka. And at this place, they had extensive informal socialization, but in the more formal occasions, like Sunday service, they would be marginalized. So that's a pattern. So there were, I think this institution in a way can represent many institutions may have the intention to include immigrants, but because of their practices and their ideologies, actually in the end, at the more fundamental sense, they othered these immigrants. I have 2 minutes, and I think I will use 3 to finish this up. So first, this is Pastor Peter, who is a 1.5 generation. Basically, they use the language, English, being with the capital, or standard language at the capital to attract immigrants. They load up all these guys who wanted to learn more about English. I just want to point to you that later, when these immigrants came to the church, he said, we have 3 packed people. Pets, I don't think it's a very very positive term to describe people, and who didn't understand English, so they don't understand English anymore. Although at the beginning there were people who want to learn more. So it's a very subtle change on that. And the next, another couple, 1.5 generation, Joanna and Henry, HM is me, were telling me, you know, how they help the immigrants because they share the same culture and so on and so forth, and why it should help them to learn English. After a long conversation, I thought I understood them. I said, so, I think you are saying that their English and their Christianity grow together. Basically, they are saying because they believe in God and their English become better. And so I was summarizing up for them. And just to point out the lines I underlined. Henry said it. So they, both of them were very happy that I articulated the idea for them. So right, 10-2. 10-4, Harry said, so as their English skills grow, their spiritual life grow also. And Joanna rephrased, said, all their spirituality grows first. So in a way, to them, it doesn't matter which one comes first, but these two are closely, intimately connected. And then this English and spirituality intimately connected to their success in the normal sense, secular sense of economic success. And so there were many turns. And here, they were, I was asking, what do you mean by success? They gave me example of a secular success. In the discussion, that's always the spiritual side and the English coming up. In 2014, they were talking this successful person who had a job with a big company, saying his spiritual level is much higher than those, I think, you know, just became Christians like Grace and Timothy. And immediately, Joanna said, you can tell that their English is still not as good as Adam and the successful people. So again, it's this, you know, almost, interchangeable relationship between this. Okay, so this, to me, it's just an example of people who are genuinely want to help immigrants because of ideology, because of the nationalist ideology connected to English, English as a medium for citizenship and for dividing who are Canadians, who are not, who are immigrants. And Bryn Maddow used this to use this ideology to position immigrants differently. And I don't have time to go there, but this is really important. The idea is pieces and bits of language ideology circulating in the public discourse, and people can easily just pick up one piece. When we have tensions and contradictions in everyday communication, we can just pick up one piece to justify for ourselves and for others. It's not necessarily a conscious individual decision, but I think it's an indication of systematic racial racism or benevolent racism constituted in language ideology that at work. So, to conclude, so they find autonomous spaces where they can accumulate social, economic, and linguistic capital. And like pre-structured materials, these and the pieces of a standard language ideology circulating in the public discourse can be easily mobilized momentarily to categorize people and explain away tensions and contradictions in the flow of the everyday life without disturbing the dominant frames of interpreting social relations. Standard language ideology thus functions as an important tool perpetuating systemic discrimination, which I think we as language workers and language researchers have a responsibility to make explicit. Thank you.